Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of June 2nd, 2022. So, recently, we're just coming out of the Memorial Day weekend, at 10 o'clock at night on Friday of the Memorial Day weekend, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, released its decision to uphold something called the MOPR rule, the MOPR rule, the minimum offer price rule. Right? Essentially, FERC buried an unpopular decision late Friday night on a holiday weekend. So be aware of that. MOPR is something that we unfortunately are forced to talk about despite its deeply geeky nature, right? It's an abstract thing. The acronym MOPR stands for Minimum Offer Price Rule, and it relates to an auction, right, where companies will try to be the lowest bidder for the right to provide electricity 2 years from now. Right? So it's part of a planning process that the grid people think about. So let me tell you the backstory, just so that you can understand where we are, where we're going, and what we're going to do today, which will be a reading of Chairman Glick's, Commissioner Glick of FERC, reading of his announcement, just so that you can hear it in his own words. So to level everybody up, FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, is a federal, U.S. federal government body. It's comprised of five commissioners. The chair is currently a guy called Richard Glick, who was put in office as chairman of that commission just at the beginning, just as Joe Biden was inaugurated, right? Biden swapped, put Glick in as chair of the commission because the Trumper in there before was just not doing the right thing. FERC is a federal organization. FERC charters across the country different regional grid operators. Here in New England, that grid operator is called ISO New England. The acronym is ISO, Independent System Operator for New England, ISO New England. ISO New England is charged with maintaining the reliability of the grid and the lowest cost of electricity. Right, that's kind of their legal mandate. Note that their legal mandate does not include greenhouse gas reductions. And in fact, ISO New England, you could make the argument, is pretty much a creature of the natural gas and electrical generation industry, right? Because those are the insiders, those are the people they work with all the time. It's a natural kind of fit. A few years ago, there was, because of the possibility that this long-range planning could be kind of corrupted by people who manipulate the auction, this funny auction that ISO New England holds for the ability, the right to provide power in 2 years, right? Because they were afraid that would be manipulated, they instituted this thing called the minimum offer price rule, okay? Let me just say as an aside, I'll put up links. There are excellent explainers of all this, both in the Boston Globe and at Earthwild WBUR. So Sabrina Shankman at the Globe and Miriam Wasser at Earthwild do a fantastic job of explaining this far better than I'll be able to. So I advise you to read that if you want to get the details. But during the Trump administration, this minimum offer price rule was basically distorted to become a weapon against renewable energies. Why is that? Why could it become a weapon against renewable energy? Because ISO sets a minimum offer in this auction. They say you must at least be this much, and we're going to calculate it for each individual project. And say in Massachusetts, a wind, like Vineyard Wind, is trying to build a wind turbine farm off of Martha's Vineyard, right? ISO looks at that project and will say, you and will essentially accuse Vineyard Wind of distorting the market because Vineyard Wind is accepting state of Massachusetts revenues, subsidies to build that wind turbine. And ISO says, oh, nay, you can't, you have to set a price that ignores those subsidies, right? Basically, it interferes with the state of Massachusetts' ability to set its own energy policy because the state of Mass wants wind turbines, but ISO says, no, you the aid provided by the state of Massachusetts to build a wind turbine distorts the market, and therefore we're not going to let you bid in at the price that actually cost you. We'll have this artificial minimum price where we ignore the subsidies the wind farm would get from the state, right? Basically, what happens is that renewable energy projects get frozen out of the market to be able to offer power 2 years down the line, right? Bad news all the way around. Of course, over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of talk about getting rid of this minimum offer price rule because it's essentially distortive of bringing renewable energy projects into the market, right? So we want to get, basically, it needs to be gotten rid of. Everyone agreed to that. So there's a two-year process starting in like 2020, saying let's get rid of the MOPR, lots of talk, lots of meetings of stakeholders, and everything seemed to be on track in December of 2021. MOPR, the MOPR rule was going to be discarded. And then in January of 2022, this year, basically at the behest of the natural gas industry and the natural gas generating industry, ISO New England did a 180 degrees and decided, no, we're not going to abandon the MOPR rule. We're going to keep it for another 2 years. Lots of happy talk about why they wanted to keep it. You can read why. But ISO decided they wanted to keep this MOPR rule that distorts and prevents or damages the aspirations of clean energy to get into the market. In order to maintain that MOPR rule for another 2 years, ISO New England has to go back to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and ask for permission, ask for approval of the new plan. Right? That new plan calls for waiting 2 years before the MOPR is abandoned. Right? That is to say, ISO New England goes to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, says, dear Federal Regulatory Energy Commission, we want to maintain, we ISO want to maintain this MOPR rule for two more years. Here's our filing. It's called a 205 filing. We want to do this. Please approve it. Okay. And so there was hope that FERC would reject that request from ISO because FERC owns ISO, so to speak. But that didn't happen. The commission, the five members of the commission basically voted 4-1 to allow this extension of the MOPR rule. The one guy who voted against it apparently is a agent of the Trump administration who thinks that the MOPR should be kept in place forever, basically. He doesn't want to get rid of it. He wants to keep it, pretty much. So anyway, what I thought would be useful to do today is to read the statement from Chairman Glick of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, in which he agreed to the request from ISO New England to extend this terrible rule for another 2 years. Okay. There's a lot of vocabulary in this letter that I'm about to read, but some of the things you should hear is there's something called the Federal Power Act, right? The FPA, that's the basis on which all of this stuff runs. It's some law from the 1970s. Okay. There are things called capacity markets, where capacity to generate electricity, you know, is bought and sold. It's an important thing in planning that in advance is important. A lot of jargon in this thing about resources. So a resource, for the purposes of the discussion, the thing I'm going to read, resources are like wind turbines or natural gas plants or batteries or all kinds of things. But really, I think one important way to think about it is that the states have the right to choose what resources, that is, say, what wind turbines they want over natural gas things, right? And there's a debate between, you know, can the states determine how they want to generate electricity, or do they have to listen to the federal government, right? Should there be a civil war between the states and the government over what kind of electricity we're going to have? There's something called a transition mechanism. Basically, that's the plan that ISO has proposed. And that transition mechanism is contained in something called a 205 filing, which again refers to some clause in the Federal Power Administration, the FPA Act, right? Okay. So given all that, let me read the statement from Chairman Glick, and I'll do my best to give it meaning, okay? So this is, I'll put up a link to it, but the statement is from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. The title is Chairman Glick Concurrence Regarding ISO New England Tariff Revisions. Okay, so here we go. This is now the voice of Chairman Richard Glick as he speaks about this MOPR rule. I believe that the best outcome here would have been for ISO New England to immediately implement its new minimum offer price rule, that is, without the transition mechanism. Simply put, ISO New England could have and should have done better. So this is Ted. What he's saying is ISO New England should have dropped the MOPR rule today. Okay. Let's go back. ISO should have done better. Nevertheless, ISO New England submitted a different proposal, one that delays the reform of the MOPR by 2 years. And we, meaning the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, we must evaluate the filing before us. When considered in that context, I, Richard Glick, believe that the proposed transition mechanism is part of a just and reasonable package of reforms. In addition, and critically, the New England states have explained that they do not oppose the transition mechanism. Maybe we'll get into that later. This is Ted. Maybe we'll get into that later. Did the New England states really oppose the transition mechanism? Okay, back to Chairman Glick's statement. Nevertheless, it is important to take a step back and not lose sight of how far we have come in this debate. It was a little over 4 years ago, in response to another ISO New England filing, establishing the competitive auction with sponsored policy resources construct. So that's another acronym, CASPER, right? The competitive auction with sponsored policy resources construct. The commission laid the foundation for its recent MOPR misadventures. In that order, the commission announced its intention to co-opt MOPRs, turning them into a means to block the effect of the state's exercise of their reserved authority under Section 201 of the FPA. That is to say, this is Ted now, let's say the states have rights to determine their own resource mix. They have the authority. Now back to Chairman Glick. He says, time has proven what I said at the time. The commission's antagonistic approach to the states would come to rank as a historically serious misstep that represented a threat to consumers, the environment, and in fact, the long-term viability of capacity markets more generally. And how? Over the ensuing 2 years, the commission engaged in a quixotic campaign to use its authority under the FPA, the Federal Power Authority, to effectively nullify certain disfavored state public policies. Right? This is Ted now. Nullify certain disfavored state public policies. That is to say, nullify the state of Massachusetts trying to encourage the wind industry, right? By asking for wind turbines off the coast. Right? Back to Mr. Glick. Far from protecting consumers and creating confidence in these capacity markets, the commission's orders risked causing serious harms to those very markets and led states to consider abandoning them altogether. In his dissent, Commissioner Danley, who's the Trumper guy I made reference before, Commissioner Danley continues to beat the drum via an ahistorical attempt to recast the MOPR as a reliability tool. Not only is that characterization unsupported by commission precedent, the evident antipathy to state resource decision-making, that is to say, equating states' exercise of their authority under Section 201B, comparing that to a manipulative scheme, only underscores the extent to which nullification was the goal all along. So Ted here, so Glick saying that this whole thing that Danley wants to do is basically nullify the state's Massachusetts authority to demand wind energy, right? Glick again. He says, there can be no winners in a regulatory civil war between FERC and the states. Although the professed rationale for using the MOPR against the state resource decision-making has whipsawed back and forth in recent years, from buyer-side market power to price suppression to market integrity to now reliability, none of those rationales can avoid the fact that any approach that puts the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and by extension, the regional transmission operators, at loggerheads with the states is bound to fail, with customers, as usual, being stuck with the tab. You get that? So he's saying that any approach that puts FERC at loggerheads with the states is bound to fail, and the customers are going to pay the bill. Back to Glick. Ending the federal-state antagonism over the MOPR represents a significant step forward towards ensuring resource adequacy, resources being energy generation, resource adequacy at a just and reasonable rates, which is, after all, the entire purpose of the capacity market. Glick goes on to say, I recognize that the changing resource mix is forcing the Commission, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, the regional transmission operators, and the states to take a new tack in ensuring reliability. No one can dispute that. But the right way, and in my way, the only just and reasonable way to do so, that is to say, to ensure reliability, to do so is by designing wholesale electric markets to ensure reliability in light of the changing resource mix, that is to say, the addition of wind turbines, this changing resource mix, rather than trying to roll back the resource mix clock. It is not the FERC's role to choose one resource type over another, or to second-guess the wisdom of state resource decision-making, that is to say, second-guess Massachusetts' desire for wind. Instead, we must ensure, in a resource-neutral manner, that wholesale electricity markets are procuring the services needed to keep the lights on and the grid in balance. Right. So he's talking about making sure that renewables are incorporated into the reliability planning of the grid. And he goes on to say, as a result of today's order, which is to say the approval of this transition mechanism, as a result of today's order, ISO New England is free to do just that, rather than engaging in a Sisyphean attempt to stymie states' efforts through the capacity market. In this respect, I strongly encourage ISO New England to move forward expeditiously in developing and filing a capacity accreditation proposal to ensure that these forward capacity markets accurately value the capacity contribution of all resources. Okay, so that's a mouthful, but there's a new word in there. Capacity accreditation. I think we'll be hearing more about that. And this is Ted speaking. I think capacity accreditation has to do with determining is a resource available at the time you want it, instead of just what's the nameplate power. Done right, capacity accreditation can serve as a prime example of how commissions jurisdictional markets can ensure reliability in a manner that complements rather than contradicts the state's exercise of their sovereign authority. That is to say, to make wind turbines, right? Sovereign authority, exactly the type of cooperative federalism that I believe should typify the Commission's interaction with the states in its regulation of wholesale markets more generally. Similarly, I, Richard Glick, urge ISO New England to consider how the unique winter reliability issues facing New England are reflected in its markets and whether those markets require modification, such as a seasonal reserve product or additional products in order to maintain reliability at just and reasonable rates, both in the near term and as the resource mix continues to evolve in the years ahead. For these reasons, I respectfully concur. So that's what the chairman announced. And one immediate question is, if Chairman Glick so dislikes the MOPR, why did he respectfully concur with its extension? Right? And there's a footnote here, first footnote, which is useful to know about. It says the following. I'll try and read it. It's full of other citations. But as today's order notes, quotation marks, best is not the standard we, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, is not the standard we apply in reviewing this Federal Power Act Section 205 filing. Right? So in other words, footnote says, FERC does not, the standard at FERC is not to say, is this proposal from ISO New England, is it the best way? That's not their job, right? FERC is not required to choose the best solution, only a reasonable solution, right? And goes on to say, a party filing a proposal need not demonstrate that its proposal is the best option, only that it is just and reasonable, right? This puts FERC in a passive and reactive role. Under Section 205, when a public utility, in this case ISO New England, submits a proposal that is itself just and reasonable, we must accept that proposal. We, the FERC, must accept that proposal even when there is a superior option, as there was here. There you go. So in other words, Chairman Glick feels that he was forced to accept this because while it may not be the best, it was just and reasonable. And I'll bring you back to the first paragraph of his statement. He said, the transition mechanism is part of a just and reasonable package. Now, he doesn't say it's the best one. He just says that it satisfies the bare minimum criteria. So I think we're going to hear more about this MOPR rule. We now need to look. This ruling says that ISO New England should develop ways to check capacity accreditation. That may be a path in for renewable energies, or a more arduous path, but it may be a way in. And there you go. That's the story. I urge you to read the reports, both at Earthwhile for WBUR and at the Boston Globe, to catch up on what it all, on all the details. So we'll close where we always close, saying that the United States needs to transition to renewable power by the year 2030, and we need to get on that now. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.